Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good day, hello, good evening. This is the 272nd day of 2013, and this is Masonic Companion, and I'm your host, Dale Graham. Welcome, and thanks for coming back and giving us a listen. I hope the end of the day that we'll all have will have satisfied some of your needs and wants, and we'll have made something entertaining and informative happen between us. It is there we go. It's like that's the way that the weather seems to be going in the this time of the year in the fall. It's like, you know, the big sigh. Like, well, you know, summer's over. That's done. Now let's get on with winter so we can get on with spring, get back to spring and the growth. And let's take a few months and just, you know, change the way we're going about doing things. The big weather sigh, the big seasonal sigh. Things Masonic have been, you know, not letting up. I wanted to I need your advice, of course. The you know, the impenetrable and infatigable think tank that's out there. You know, I want to talk today and get some advice from you about the course of Freemasonry and what's happening around the world. You not just think, well, I want to think large, act small. You know, we want to work at our level. Do what we can, and now beginning with ourselves, making that kind of Masonic contribution, and something I want to share with listeners. I think it's a really important lesson that the essentials of Freemasonry isn't about, it's about your development, but it's about your development in relation to a lodge function, in relation to a fraternity. If anything, if you have this feeling, and I think you've understood the principle, and the feeling is when you're ready to put yourself out for the sake of the lodge, when you're ready to bite your lip, to talk, it's not a matter of tolerating things that are beyond your principles. That's not what I'm suggesting at all. I think that would be just anarchy. Anybody, any fool would be able to do anything, anytime, with impunity. But it's learning that lesson of tolerance within yourself. How much can you do for the sake of the lodge? Well, it's an easy measure. If what you do is just ignoring a slight or something that you think was improperly handled, then that's fairly easy. The harmony of the lodge is protected. You don't come across as a malcontent. Remember, your silence speaks volumes. It's very loud, especially particularly when you're not sure what to do. The preservation of the harmonics within a lodge is something that's beyond the individual, beyond you and I, where we do it not for our own sake, but for the sake of the lodge. And remember, this isn't something that you do without qualification. It's always qualified because you're a thoughtful man. We are reasonable people and we are rational. So if we see things around us that are, if we see that our actions can make a contribution to the harmonics, fine. There comes that tipping point, though, when our actions, our stalwart, stoic behavior is actually contributing to a problem, perpetuating a problem. Now, that's just simple dynamics of a lodge. I suggest that if a lodge, if you are experiencing that type of interpersonal complication, then the lodge isn't working. It's not a lodge at work. If a lodge is at work, you don't have time or an inclination to think about the pettiness. It's as simple as that. That's, I think, one of those uncomfortable truths that's easier to deal with listening to a radio program on things Masonic. When you are in lodge, we are not there to find fault. Huh? We are there to experience the expression of ritual that reveals philosophical fact, philosophical information within the storylines. I'm afraid I don't know how that can be done. Well, yes, I suppose it can be done with very poor acting, very poor quality ritual. If you have a strength of mind to overcome those distractions. But I truly think that the distractions shouldn't be there in the first place. And if you know, what's an acceptable level of distraction? Well, we have lost the ability to make that decision anymore. Any distraction is acceptable, except in the lodges where it's not. Distraction like that takes away from the quality, and that in the distraction changes from a story, from a metaphor, into the struggle of a person who hasn't prepared or who doesn't have the ability. In a way, Masonic ritual is like a training ground. We're going to see the young actors, and in all fairness, very, very few of the mentors. The sad part is they do a very poor job at teaching Masons how to do ritual, a poor job. I'd say mentors generally. And they do an abysmal job teaching ritualists how to assume the character of the speaker, the character of the lines that they're delivering. Abysmal. and I say this as a personal challenge, as if I'm just saying my thoughts out loud here. The reason that that would be important, I think, as I say it, it's self-evident. You're probably not the type of Mason that needs to hear it, because I think somebody that takes the time to tune into a program like this already understands these things. I'll just put words to your thoughts as well. The importance of taking on the character is a part of the learning. So when we're expecting a fellow just to memorize the work and give the monotone, and I've heard some ritual yesterday that was, it was stunning. If ever anybody wanted an alternative to anesthetic for a surgery, they should just listen to this crew deliver this ritual in the monotone. No breaks, no everything stuttering. It was mind-numbing. And if we could numb your mind when we were going in for surgery, we wouldn't need any of that expensive anesthesia, would we? So I'm suggesting here we have a revenue, that some of this ritual is so poorly done that it's developed into a revenue stream for Masons. The Freemasons at every operating room across Ontario, and you'll be given the option. You can have the anesthesiologist there, or you can listen for 20 minutes to some of the most tedious, boring, poorly prepared struggle by a whole crew, end up having no clue what's going through your mind. The whole surgery could be done. Now just think, even if we charged maybe a third of what an anesthesiologist would get, we could be skillionaires. I mean, boys, we have to look for opportunities. You know what comes out the back end of the cows? That's opportunity. We could spread it all over the fields and, new things happen. So I'm not saying, I'm just saying, you'll follow where I'm going. Lemons, lemonade, you see, yeah. Okay, there we go. So that's my takeaway, the takeaway for the morning. I don't think our problems aren't life-threatening for the order of the Freemasons. Never. No, we're not. We can be really goofy and cause all kinds of gaps. But, for years and years, we've neglected our infrastructure. So the place looks like, it's like if you're a Shakespearean actor on a stage, you can come out with the elbows out of your sweater, and it's all weather-beaten and faded from repeated washings. And you can deliver your lines, and we'll sit there with tears in our eyes. But if you're pushing a shopping cart down the street at 7:30 at night, and it's full of all of your belongings, it's a rather pathetic revelation about the failure of our society. Always, and what happens? It's easier to point a finger at that person. Easier to objectify the individual, depersonalize them, blame the person, because it's easier to do that than to say, gee, we've got a system problem here. Because system problems boggle the mind. Because first, if we could all develop consensus, we could solve these things, but we don't know how to do that. It's not that I say that we don't know how. We haven't a clue. And within our fraternity, we are gently, and I say this in the kindest spirit of fraternity, we are clueless about developing consensus. We do. We don't know that you can just suck it up, buttercup, move on. It's for the sake of seeing what would happen if you could achieve 1,000 consensi. If you could develop on decisions, big or small, 1,000 in a row, there's a goal for it. 1,000. Now think about what that would do to any life experience. That would be stunning. The product then would be you'd have consensus about some half-baked bonehead idea that some half-baked, out-of-date Masonic brain came up with. But you would also have the freedom of mind to talk about them. There would be a consensus in the room. Then the next would be to talk about what happened, to talk about the impact of the idea. Not personalizing and not saying, oh, it was one of Dale's harebrained ideas, or the, you know, that's the old boys coming up with it. They have control issues. Well, of course they have control issues. Don't you and I? Let's face it, we all do. We all like to have some sense of control and some sense of impact. But here, the idea of Freemasonry teaches us we may have influence. We may have influence if we get it done properly. But scurry around, not to develop conspiracy, but to develop consensus means that we develop a rapport. And the rapport is to understand the thinking of the people around us. Not to correct their thinking, like where in the world did we become Hiram May? But and we get that a lot. You know, people they've walked through that membrane between good manners and poor manners all the time. And yes, you are going to be influenced. You walk into a room of Masons, you're going to be influenced. We elicit opinion. And then we walk away saying half of it's half-daft because it doesn't agree with us. Here's the deal. I want you to think about this. I want you to think that create 1,000 consensi. Create that. That's the singular task. And within that single task are 1,000 different steps. And the steps are to develop consensus and then move on from that to the second and to the third. Now, that's your task. That's your individual task. And when you get through the first, no matter large or small, the easier that you get that, you don't have to solve, you don't have to build St. Paul's Cathedral in the first effort. Come on. We're developing consensus that will enable us to do great things, maybe at the 999. Going to get there, you know, none of us collectively, me included. So you think Masonically we're taught about potential, aren't we? Now does anybody ever talk to us about the mathematics? No. We don't even get this in terms of discussions around Masonic leadership. What we get is an exercise around command structure, you know, things like that. And I can't quite, you know, I can understand that. Now, does that lead us to a capacity to you know, we have order. Absolutely, of course. We need to have some order. Even the little molecules that make us up have some patterns within them. And I'm not going to get into quarks and all the edgy physics that's going on right now, but generally. So there is an order, and there's a connectivity, isn't there? And there's an attraction, positives and negatives. So those things are important. Remember, those things are important in a lodge. The dissenting opinion is very important in order to develop consensus. If we all say, we are all thinking like you. Let's say you're right. So we'll take you as the example. And we're all nodding. And we're all mouthing the words that you're saying. There's no thought. There is no thought. Thought is a production. Thought is taking in, is assimilating information. Assimilating information. The benefit, of course, if we have the pleasure of sitting in a lodge with 75 of us, you think that we have 75 of these catchments. We can pick up the cosmic rays, right? Cosmic rays. The 75 of us are more effective than one. And by the way, the cosmic rays are blasting through every night, about 1 million of them penetrate through your body, by the way. But don't worry, we're biologically set up for that. The equivalent over the course of a year is about the radiation from about two chest x-rays. That's all. No, you can't escape it. And it's been like that since the day your mother was born. That's a refreshing little beverage little cough syrup I'm taking there. So think about this. We can leadership take you to that opportunity to look into that fountain, and you see your reflection. And when you're in there, do you see what happens if there is consensus? Now, even get your mind around what that would feel like. Just too far-fetched. Have I gone off? You know, am I losing it? No more frontal lobe activity here. I'm just, I'll be wandering around the streets in my bedroom slippers soon. Yeah, I'm not really giving a crap. I count the days for that freedom of mind, by the way. But think about it. It's hard. I think this is metaphysics at its best. This is more the abstraction. Even if, to take this another step, even if you think about some form of art that will represent these ideas in your mind so that you can visualize, go out and do that. For me, it's like Degas, you know, it is. It's more, and then it's a little bit beyond impression. And I'm thinking more Picasso, you know, what in the world was he doing? Well, he was doing something to fill in the gaps of emotional expression that weren't available with sort of that notion of what's real, what we can see. He said, yeah, that does part of it, but there's something else still there that's not being expressed. So he changed the rules, didn't he? Came up with it's what he put on campus was a different way of thinking. So think about this in terms of consensus. And then think about that within the context of the life and balance of Freemasonry. You know, I'm not a proponent, as I say in the prospectus on this program, I'm not a proponent of revivals because nothing moves backwards. That, I think, speaks about our nostalgia. Good. And I think nostalgia will absolutely... I don't think that's very healthy for what we're talking about here. Nostalgia belongs somewhere else. When we see a picture, something that reminds us of the past in a good way. But to try and live as if we are all doing a reenactment, what does that say about us? I mean, really, what the hell? You know, in order for me to be effective, I have to dress and act as a 18th century Prussian soldier, and I have to conduct my life, boots polished, following orders, ready to step into the breach, and carry myself with this feigned sense of honor and this quest for glory. Nah, I don't think so. Not gonna happen. No. Move it sideways into Freemasonry. What are you asking me? Do you need me to perfect my state sense of Freemasonry? Do you think I need to be able to understand the way life was in the past and live that type of life? Well, that isn't going to happen. I live in 2013, and the things that I'm doing are preparing me for 2014, not 2012. Been there, done that. Do you want me to prepare to be in my 20s? It was ugly. And by the way, you were all there with me, so don't give me... Oh, yes, I have a calendar. I know what was going on. So all of this, the sun shining out all of your body orifices? Yeah, okay. If you were the... If I thought that the order was full of men that lived under a rock and ran around trying to be good little boys all the time, I would run. I don't want it. I need to be around the people that took a risk. You're still doing that. You're still taking a risk. You say, hey, maybe there's hope for me yet. I'm still banging on that drum and I'm going after it. I'm still out there along the path picking up the rock and I'm still taking a look to see what's underneath it. I'm still putting my hand into that dark hole because there might be something really magical in there. Oh, my goodness, you might get something that will eat off your hand. Don't be climbing trees because you'll break your arm. We live a risk. And in order to progress, we have to be able to mitigate that risk. Get on with the task. So and you know why we do that? It isn't because somebody tells us to do it. It's because of our curiosity. Now, this is a distinction about you. You do this of your own free will and accord. That's the beauty. That's how we begin to develop consensus. But the ideas that we work with have to be magnificent ideas. We are only as good as the mediocrity of the ideas. We're going to build a structure. Okay. Now, my friend Bill said, you know, he's going to build do you know what a salt box shed is? And you look at it, and it has this simplistic functional beauty. And when he put it together, it was wonderful. Put a nice big window in it. It's sort of like what do the Americans call it? Man caves. I wish they'd grow a pair, you know. Everything's man caves. God sakes. It's just the way we live and the way we are. So, but is it magnificent within its own purpose, its intended purpose? But does it inspire? You look closely, it does. But today, what inspires you and I and the thousands of Masons around us is something more. Yes, we can appreciate the simple beauty. Yes, we can say, well, that's clever. And I see what he's trying to do and I see how he did it. But what inspires are things that endure. Well, salt box structures endure it. But so did the magnificent cathedrals. We don't hear an order based on the metaphors surrounding the development of a salt box. But we do have a metaphor that parallels perhaps what the Noahic. It dwells, it permeates the work of the Abrahamic faiths of the world. Not all major faiths are Abrahamic, but the three that have influenced most of us, plus our ability to be receptive to what was going on in the East. We are wiser if we begin to study and take a look at the advances that were in place. The advances in medicine, molecular science, astronomy, and astrology that were taking place in the Arab states, before they were the Arab states, taking place in the lands of the Persians. I'm not talking about the lands that have been defined by the zealots. And we have no reason to be smug about that, I don't think. You know, you dial back, in our own history? Our own history is the history of, for people the likes of me, is the history in the United Kingdom, before it was the United Kingdom, where murderous religious wars were fought, homicidal leadership, paranoia. That's part of the history of the likes of me. And now it grips me by the throat when I see that happening to peoples in other parts of the world. I wish they could learn from what my forefathers went through. I wish they could. The wholesale slaughters and the senselessness that we began to realize. It was only when we realized one of us could keep killing the other. There was no domination. even this neo-Nazi movement, yeah, you're still getting some fringe thinkers. Well, you know, there's always something that falls off the cart when you're trying to get to market. That's those kind of, and, you know, we know how much tolerance we don't have for that kind of stuff. But these, we need magnificent ideas to help us to thrive. Revival, we can spend a lot of time focusing on that. But I want all of the revivalists out there, particularly within the order, to get rid of most of their appliances. They didn't exist in the 50s. I want you to give up power brakes, power steering, air conditioning, power windows, power seats. Yeah. Yep. I want you to give up central air conditioning in your house, of course. High-definition television, remote controls, push-button anything. Most of the novel medications that we have today, most all of them. Heart surgery, no. Treatment for diabetes, well, you know, that didn't exactly, yes, in the stores, there wasn't quite as much salt and sugars packaged into food and given to fed to the children. So maybe there's some advantage there, isn't there? And we didn't exactly treat young men in their 20s and 30s as if they were just big boys that we could leave alone to idle away their hours. Of course, we didn't have the amount of decay in marriages that we have today. The violence, men still pounding the hell out of women, was ever present. We didn't know how to approach it, did we? Our morals had some limits back in the day. The oppression of vulnerable peoples, well, it was more blatant in those days. Now we're still paying the shocking and disgusting price for that, you know, for the stuff is shocking. And we should. And we should. And those things should never be forgotten. Now, for people that come from somewhere else and see this, hey, it was going on in wherever you came from, too. It was always there. Nobody's above this type of revelation. There's always an underbelly to what's happening. There's always something in the weeds, something moving through the slime. And it's up to us to keep an eye on it. Now we have the free thinkers trying to, you know, go back. You want to be a revivalist? There. And I say do all of those things because that's part of the context. It wasn't the outcome. It was the context that led to the outcome that it fascinates me. How did we do all of those great things? It wasn't because of consensus within Masonic lodges. I can attest to that. But time seems to sanitize some of these ideas, doesn't it? Time does. And it lets us know, you know, that the idea is something that was once edgy, as all innovation is. Innovation is unpleasant. It's unpleasant. It's titillating. It's almost, it has that sense of violating our norms and our expectations. All new things do that. That's the reaction to change. And how we control that reaction is through study. Oops, did I mention that? We have to work. No free ride, no free lunch. The more we understand about our own nature, the more we understand about the events going on around us, the context and the process, the purpose, the philosophy of science, the histology of science, the better we're able to control our own desires. not entirely. We don't say we reduce them so that we become machinery, or that we calculate where we. That's why we have to keep a close eye on the people that we elect to be in power. And now we're learning that we have to keep a closer eye on the people that we're supposed to trust. As we always, and mankind has always had to do that. No difference. We're just bringing that forward. And if time or experience that doesn't give us the examples of why we do that, all we have to do is wait for a few minutes. And either we're into denial and repressing the truth at our own peril, or we're headed for another calamity with power where we have to correct the attitude. It's the people that are in charge. Always the people. Ultimate responsibility. It's wonderful. So that's why I'm not a proponent of anything that has to do with revival, unless your wristwatch moves backwards. Life doesn't, time doesn't, consequences of our actions remain as references to what once was. And disappointments. Disappointments are what we call experience. The things that don't work out the way you want them. Time is unchanged. Our perspective moves. Our perspective, your perspective moves, either learning or repeating as time and history become experience. One would think we need thoughtful discussion to improve 21st century Freemasonry. It is, I think, this order, boyishly muscular. Anything but thoughtful. Globally, I mean, honestly, I don't think we come across this. I think we come across respectful of thoughtful people in power. At the highest level. And that's a very, very, I think, telling aspect of Freemasonry. It's like, what do they call them? Sunday morning. Sunday morning, I'm a good member of my faith. And the rest of the week, I go about doing what I do. But Sunday morning, I'm a good member of my faith. And I think, you know, in presence of our elders, we dress up and we nod obsequiously. And that seems to make up for all the other, for a carefree lack of responsibility. I've had the misfortune of seeing somebody write it, the more material about happiness. Anything but thoughtful. The atmosphere that's going to help you and I proceed, I think, is that atmosphere of contemplation that fosters a contemplative mind. Now, can we do that with in groups? Yeah, we can. It can be accomplished, of course. And does it happen alone? Well, essentially it does. The change that we're talking about, that is your change, your growth. It happens within you. You are the only one who understands whether you're progressing or not. So the difference is whether you ask yourself that question. And if you're not, please, by all means, blame Freemasonry. If you need a scapegoat, blame the order, blame something. Or knock on the door of the Delphi. And she will come forward, and or her aides will come forward and take down your question. And what's your question? Well, my question about this to her would be, what am I not getting? Now, you know, after a period of time, an answer would be produced. It wasn't necessarily an answer to the question that I had asked. And it didn't necessarily rhyme. It didn't have symmetry necessarily. But that would be my answer in a way I would be packed. The idea, if you think about it, is this: the key, the answer, lies in the question. If you're able to pose the question, then you have sufficient insight to find the answer within yourself. Now, there's your, it's not a journey, but I guess that's as, it's a bit of a weak metaphor, but I know you, some of you will say it's power, power, blah, blah, blah. No, it's I think, an interesting way of approaching this. Boyishly muscular, yeah, I'm going to stand up and I've got the floor, so I'm going to say what's on my mind because you need to hear blah, 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 blah. So in those moments, find that place in your thoughts where you can just remove yourself. Do a little daydreaming, you know, go to a nice happy happy thought. Think of happier times. Or put it all in context about the direction of Masonry and the effect of this kind of tolerance. Not that the speaker does this, but that everybody else in the room tolerates it. Think, that's the uncomfortable challenge when we think about our tolerances. Kills us. Anything but thought, it jabs that weak scholarship, you know. So we can improve on that. Weaker performance, we can improve on that. At least here I'll say, I can. And expectations that have dropped through the floor. It's not that they have, but it's the impression. It's the impression that once we were pristine, now we're tarnished. Once we were this collective of brilliant minds, and now we are us. Well, remember, that collection of brilliant minds occurs because history allows us to compress time. Our study of history allows us to compress time. All the genius within Freemasonry has never existed at any one point in time. The brilliance of your district or the brilliance of Freemasonry, the clever ideas, they happen sporadically. Sporadically. So we have historians, our antiquarians look back and they can collect these dates and they can space them out. Now, in our history, we can space things out by hundreds of years. But if I give you dates and lines that let's say I'm talking about James Anderson and 1717. Well, he wasn't born in 1717. Or I'm talking about the first Constitution, 1723. Well, it wasn't just written in 1723. Or I talk about Morgan. What was that? 1826, was it? Yeah. You know, there are some events. And so I do this on a page or in a paragraph. And then I talk about that nitwit Leo Taxil. Oh, and by the way, every time you make a joke about a goat, you're putting another penny in Leo Taxil's pocket, the big fat liar. And he used us. And then you perpetuated it. He used us to have a rant at the church. Because what he made is outlandish. This is the exploit of nature. It's like, God, learn from this one here. This is interesting. Go ahead and Google your heart out about Leo Taxil. That wasn't even his real name. But he wrote under that name. And yeah, he joined Freemasonry, and then he was punted out. I think he was a bit of an ass. Today, what do? Well, we don't punt out the ass. We just, you know, we'll give him an office. There we go. And then we're surprised when everything goes to hell. Well, Captain, we're going to try and land this ship. Yeah, right. So Leo was ticked with his church. And so he writes this scandalous garbage about Freemasonry and the salacious appetite of all these so-called honorable and good people of our communities went out and bought it. He became a scullionaire who was selling it so fast the British could hardly keep up with it. So he's making all this money, and it was all crap about our practices and demonic worship and stuff. Not a serious not a serious or thoughtful portrayal of paganism. Thing, you know, like that term came out about big time because of the Catholic Church. Oh, and by the way, while we're having this conversation, we talk about the suppression of women in the church. Let's not even go there. That's not the point of this. That's concept creep. Taxil had an axe to grind. He used Freemasonry. Because as soon as he printed his book, of course the church got into it. Oh, there, we always knew. Those people should be banned. They should be excommunicated. You can't be. It's not a crime, but it's a sin. You know, you shouldn't go. You know, no. You come near those. You go near those boys, and we're gonna ban you, really. And then his big revelation, and he did. He stood up in court and said, "Yeah, I lied. Made it all up." And so the judge says, "What the hell? What's going on through your mind?" And what's he say? I was getting back at the church, and I want to thank them, because what they did was they jumped all over the Freemasons. They jumped all over this without checking to see whether there was anything valid in any of these claims. Ha ha, I win. Thank you, Leo. But what are the geniuses out there in the world remember? They don't remember that chess move of an exploitive kind of character. What do we do? Say, oh, what a clever boy. You know, greed and money being the be-all and end-all today. Oh, what a clever boy. What about the impact on the reputation of our order? Well, nobody cares. It's just a bunch of fumbling old guys that really don't do too much. And they, you know, they've fallen into irrelevancy. Well, you want to know why we've fallen into irrelevancy? Well, it ticks me off. And I don't need Andrew Hammer. I love his work, and I have such respect for the way he's been able to put his ideas together, but he's harsh, man, he's harsh. I think what's happened is, you know, the people that read that garbage are buying the books, and the books are still in circulation, and they're still being quoted. You can still see that crap about, you know, drinking blood and all these other outrageous crap. I think you have to be a bit of a, I guess if you weren't brought up on the, you know, sipping PlayStation 101, you know, then maybe you'd, you know, this was your elixir of the day. Oh, you know, those dirty Freemasons, look what they're really doing. We do that all the time. That's why they're secret. Well, grow up, give your head a shake. Idiot. Look at the quality and caliber of the men that were Freemasons in the day. If you lost your mind, you want to point fingers behind your little hankies. It's always been going on, that whisper campaign. Oh, there you go. Dirty little secrets. But today, age of communication, a lot of the secrets coming out. Lots of secrets coming out. We aren't one of them anymore. I think that the people that are out there buying that slime of the writings of Taxil, even though he declared it was all a lie, he recanted. Well, people don't care about that. They don't care about the truth. They care about what titillates. We want to see the carnage on our evening news so that it makes us feel better because, oh, that, look at that wreck. Look at that car. Oh, those people, that's what's wrong with boys these days. They should be whipped, you know, because they're out there drinking. Well, it makes us feel pious, doesn't it, when we can say things, idiot things, insensitive things like that? Oh, well, you know, she must have deserved it. He did that. I knew it. I could tell from the look of him that he was guilty. Really? Habeas corpus? No sense of rule of law, you know? It's all that desire. The salivating mob hasn't changed. The salivating mob is still there. So they still believe this stuff. Well, I don't think we ever got over. You know, I think we went to ground when those things hit us. Certainly Morgan really rocked us, didn't it? Particularly the States. And yeah, we were influenced heavily by the United States. I don't want to think that they've captured our minds today. Unless we're gonna let them capture our minds for a while. But, you know, they're nice people down there, some of them. Well, there's other things that I'm glad I'm up here. Anyway, I digress. The point is, the guilt became tarnished. We had strayed outside the laboratories, hadn't we? We had strayed outside the philosophy. We were no longer the philosopher kings. We were the braggarts. And that caused a backlash, largely, I'm just assuming that Bullock's work is historically correct, but he makes a strong and compelling argument that it was that bravado, that strut, that indifference to the rules, where we were gaining privilege through our encounters with one another, that annoyed the average person. And, well, it should when you think about it. Now, we went to ground. Over in Britain, they've had these exposés going on in the 80s and 90s, very powerful and political. From what I know as a Freemason, is it necessary? No, I think it's necessary because, you know, when there is that doubt and suspiciousness, it's the type of thing that can be very powerful and insidious. It can creep into a cultural way of thinking. I think the way the Freemasonry has handled this is a genius in itself. We've rolled over on our backs and exposed our underbelly. We became vulnerable. We no longer wanted to be perceived as a threat, and probably and rightfully so. But at what price? Let's just come across as a bunch of we're sort of a quasi service club now, really. We're doing food banks and we're doing all kinds of things. And you can see, you know, we're in the newspaper again. And so you can compare for yourself. Well, people, it's easier for us to do those things and help people to compare us to a service club if that allows them to frame us. Because you and I know we're not a service club. But how in the world do you go about explaining that to the larger population? Well, you don't. I don't think it's very easy. I think we can. But it's very hard. It's easier. So we give people something that's easier, makes Freemasonry more accessible. Oh, it's like Kiwanis. Oh, it's like Kinsmen. You know, great organizations. It's like the Lions. Now, those are organizations that are doing huge, huge, incredibly talented and committed people. And in a way, I guess it's like Rotary because we meet all the time. And we have that sense that we're the Lions of society only. We're not anymore, are we? We have... But we're large, so inside of our organizations, we have the Lions of Society. And we're not like Lion's Den. This isn't like Dragon's Den. This isn't where the movers and shakers are going to hang out with all of the smugness of movers and shakers. No. This is where those folks that happen to also be people of insight and conscience can find perhaps like-minded fellows to share the experience. We went to ground, and I think for important reasons, always with the caution, and I think the same caution that we have today, watch the West Gate. We're letting in people that should never be getting into Freemasonry. Now, that's something that's not new. That's been there for a long, long time. And it's true. It's accurate. I'm not talking about truth. I'm thinking it's accurate. But the question is either we stop it with a ballot or we fix it once it happens. And we fix it by saying when the daft, when we let in somebody that's daft, we have to minimize their impact, don't we? And give them the opportunity to step up, to be more self-aware. And the only way we do that is by confronting the problem, talking about the problem. Now think about the benefit of a lodge that has the power of consensus, or in your case, consensi. And you're into the 536th in a row. And for some reason, you let in somebody's nitwit young cousin. Okay. Now, who knew? I would suggest to you that there is no way in this God's earth you're going to give up that opportunity for the 537th consensus and tolerate that kind of nonsense. Nope. The value of what you have will grow and grow and grow. Your the development of your order your order within your lodge will be sublime. And as you do the 537th, you know that the 538th will already be a process. It's not going to be a concerted struggle over the minutia. It will be actually a way of thinking and expectation. Fabulous. Fabulous. Is that within our grasp? Is it within your grasp or my grasp? Well, I think that's a hell of a lot more achievable. So we start with one, huh? Where a journey starts with the first step. It's a Chinese proverb. There you go. Yeah, so we start with one. And where do we go beyond that? Well, that depends on the goal. That depends on the goal. Is the goal that you want to go someplace beautiful or that you want to enjoy the trip? Well, it's all right from time to time to go on a trip alone. But I love traveling with my friends. I love traveling with my friends. It's great. If I can do that, and along the way, we have these enthusiastic discussions. It's fabulous. Having the chance to talk with each other, with you. It is absolutely astounding what you can learn. Because there's so much going on, we can't possibly pick it all up ourselves. Yeah, it's not a competition. It's not a competition. It's not like who knows most. Although you see that, don't you? I see some very unhappy fellows. Oh, they always have to be right. I was talking about yesterday. It's almost like if you offer him help, he feels insulted. What? I haven't done something wrong? No, I've already done that. Well, unwind yourself. You're a heart attack looking for a place to happen there, pal. Ah, what do I know? I am enough of an artist to draw freely upon my imagination. Imagination is more important than knowledge. Knowledge is limited. Imagination encircles the world. That's our friend and my. I'm the love child of Albert Einstein, by the way, or Gareth Bale. I can't quite sure. I think might be the English footballer, the Welsh footballer. I think he's only 24, but, you know, 100 million pounds. Daddy. If you can't explain it to a six-year-old, you don't understand it to yourself. That's our friend, my friend Al, my dad, Albert Einstein. if you're going to make it up, pick somebody fabulous. I know all of you are love child of Elvis. I know. Fantastic. Or Wren or Marlowe or Shakespeare. Yeah, pick one. It's great. Now, have I exhausted your goodwill, your Masonic nature? I certainly hope not. Oh, man, if you want your children to be intelligent, this is fabulous. I love it. Al, you're brilliant. I mean, I wonder, we never see Al sitting down with a drink. Maybe he was a teetotaler. I'm going to have to research that. But sometimes the way he puts his ideas together, he must have loved a single malt. I mean, geez, boy, he's here. If you want your children to be intelligent, read them fairy tales. If you want them to be more intelligent, read them more fairy tales. Well, yeah, because at least this guy has a sense about the, you know, abstract reasoning. Oh, no, no, we have to whip him into shape and... Look what we're producing. Oh, these droids, these people, kids that are, you know, they're 30 years old and they're clueless. They figured out, they're bright enough to know they need a direction in life. They're also aware enough to know that they're bored to tears, but they haven't been taught the structure. They have no tolerance because they haven't been taught, because their parents are so busy pandering to this false notion of perfection. All conflict is bad. There you go. Life is like riding a bicycle. To keep your balance, you must keep moving. There you go. It's true, isn't it? Move ahead. Anyone who has ever made a mistake has never made a mistake. That would be all of you, because I'm constantly up to my rear end. And if you've never made a mistake, you've never tried anything new. That's why I like being in your company. You make me feel normal. You do. It's refreshing to be with you and talk with you. I speak to everyone in the same way, whether he is the garbage man or the president of the university. That's not me, but that I do that too. Only because once upon a time I had a broom in my hands and I was cleaning the floors of the paper mill. And I remember the feeling. And when somebody came along that sort of treated you like you were a second-class citizen, there you go. I remembers. Coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. When you are courting a nice girl, an hour seems like a second. When you sit in a red-hot cinder, a second seems like an hour. That's relativity. Reality is merely an illusion, albeit a very persistent one. So the reality that we see around us, Freemasonry, take it literally. It is an illusion. It's not. It's the way that we're looking at it. So, can we seriously and thoughtfully define Freemasonry as opportunity and mean it? Is there proof of that? Mediocre ideas. Oh, God, if I hear any more papers done about the compasses, I will run down the street screaming. Let it go. It's been done. We'll move on. Oh, all right. I know. New guys are coming through the door all the time, and for them, it's really essential learning. Yes, absolutely. But we're not all in need of sitting there with a primer in our hand. Are you boys old enough to know what a primer is? Yeah. I'll bet. Don't give me that. Some of you were using a straight pen and an inkwell not that long ago. And I won't talk about those who learned how to crank the engine of a car. The box all ran smoothly like a top. Huh? If we knew what it was we were doing, it would not be called research, would it? And here, never memorize something that you can look up. This is what I think inspires. This is why, he captures stuff. It's not like, oh, gee, I'm thinking like Einstein. It's like Einstein thinks like people that think. This is something that I ascribe to you. It's not that I think that we all have no special talents, because I think I don't mean to always be glib and say that you're the brain trust, but you do give me advice. I think you are passionately curious. If we're going to ask questions of the new fellow at the door, this is one of the things for the candidate. Not, are you passionately curious? Duh. But tell me, what kind of things are you curious about? And when you're curious about something, what do you do? So if a person says, well, I go to my PlayStation and sit in the basement, well, it's not probably a boy we want to have sitting with us. Oh, I don't know. I asked the missus. Probably not somebody, in terms of the relationship of our partners into somebody that does laundry. And I did hear a DDGM talk about that in front of a crowd. Anyway, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my tag. Here he says, this is truly Al. I think Al was your father too, right? Albert Einstein. Any man who can safely drive while kissing a pretty girl is simply not giving the kiss the attention it deserves. Yes. Al better not look here. He says, if a cluttered desk is a sign of a cluttered mind, of what then is an empty desk of size? Man, I've got a cluttered mind. Everywhere there's piles on the floor, there's piles. Once you accept the universe as matter expanding into nothing, that is something. Wearing stripes with plaid comes easily. Oh, man. And here, I'll cut this off. But this is something I wish for you. Try not to become a man of success. Rather, become a man of value. Please. the consensus.
Consensus. Always the consensus.
And here was an interesting portion. This is, remember, I'm talking about Montaigne, eh? And 16th century, you know? Didn't he make it to the 17th century? So this material would have been available to the men of the Royal Society. They probably would have had a translation of this, or probably in the original French, sitting on their in their library. And since there was nothing else quite like this, would they have read it as a reference? Yeah, they probably would. Because it was a way of expanding ideas. Now, would all scientists have read this? No. Here, Montaigne is telling us and teaching us his own thinking about how to live well, how to live. So he's saying, well, question everything. Question everything. We covered the first thing, how to live. Don't worry about death. Remember that? And then we talked about how to live. Pay attention. Start to write, even your stream of subconsciousness. So, do we need to do this? Yeah, how to live. It says be born. Now I'm going to try and tuck into this one a little bit. We're not going to get ahead of ourselves here. This is about paying attention. This was a person that was became aware of himself. Became aware, not because there was necessarily a school of thought. So think of it more, a nice word for this kind of thing is a phenomenological look. There's some phenomena that's happened here. We look at this man's body of work as a phenomena. And that's an interesting way of saying, well, all of this great pile of work we can put on a spoon and we're now going to digest it and see what it reveals to us. So it's like a meal of ideas, huh? I think just about everything in Freemasonry is. The idea of the lesson inside the metaphor, inside an envelope, conveys deeper information. So today we're going to look at just a little bit. When you're doing something, you want to live well, pay attention. When you're dancing, dance. When you're walking, walk. When you're being thoughtful, be thoughtful. When you're curious, be curious. At moments like these, Montaigne seemed to almost have a Zen-like discipline and ability just to be. Now this is something that happens when you're doing your research. You're focused on that, or you're in your backyard with a good book, enjoying the warmth around you, the weather around you, and the ideas and the page in front of you. And you have your tasks and your routine for the morning, and then an idea of what you need to do next. As Montaigne got older, his desire to pay astounded attention to life did not decline. It intensified. And you must notice that too. You're able to pay more attention and notice little details you didn't notice before. By the end of a long process of writing the essays, he had almost perfected the trick. Knowing that the life that remained to him could not be of great length, he said, I try to increase it in weight. I try to arrest the speed of its flight by the speed with which I grasp it. The shorter my possession of life, the deeper and fuller I must make it. He discovered a sort of strolling meditation technique. I'm going to just reveal this to you. Now think about it. You don't have that much time left that you did when you were in your 20s. So you increase the weight deeper. You deepen the experience. When I walk alone in the beautiful orchard, if my thoughts have been dwelling on extraneous incidents for some part of the time, for some other part, I bring them back to the walk, to the orchard, to the sweetness of this solitude, and to me. Do you mind if I just read that again? It's very soothing. When I walk alone in the beautiful orchard, if my thoughts have been dwelling on extraneous incidents for some part of the time, for some other part, I bring them back to the walk, to the orchard, to the sweetness of this solitude, and to me. It sounds so simple put like that, but nothing is harder to do. This is why Zen masters spend a lifetime or several lifetimes learning it. Even then, according to traditional stories, they often manage it only after their teacher hits them with a big stick, the kasuka, used to remind the meditators to pay full attention. Montaigne managed it after one fairly short lifetime, partly because he spent so much of that lifetime scribbling on paper with a very small stick. In writing about his experience, as if he were a river, now he is you, as if he was a river, he started a literary tradition of close inward observation that is now so familiar that it's hard to remember that it is a tradition. Life seems just to be like that, and observing the play of inner states is the writer's job. Yet this was not a common notion before Montaigne. Can you, think about that? We shouldn't take this one for granted. It's like, a lot of things we need to keep in mind. And his peculiarly restless, free-form way of doing it was entirely unknown. Inventing it and thus attempting a second answer to the question how to live, pay attention, Montaigne escaped his crisis and even turned that crisis to his advantage. Both don't worry about death and pay attention were answers to a midlife loss of direction. I'm in my 60s. Is that midlife? Yeah, I'm delusional. There you go. Yeah, and we're all getting bloody younger every day. There you go. You remember when you could suck it in when a pretty girl walked by? There is no sucking anything in anymore, boys. You don't like it, don't look. Sorry, I digress. Did I say that out loud? Oh, I'm sorry. The Masonic gods would penalize me for that kind of truth, I'm sure. But it was meant between the points of the compasses. I just think one of those points I'm sitting on right now. Oh, wait, that was a dream state. The last minute and a half were not the responsibility of the producers of this program. Yet, dear, that's natural humor. I get that from hanging around with the likes of you boys. Don't worry about death and pay attention or answers to a midlife loss of direction. They emerge from the experience of a man who had lived long enough to make errors and false starts. But they also mark the beginning about the birth of his new essay writing self. So how to live? He adds to this with be born. Be born. In the essays, Montaigne wrote that he had been carried in his mother's womb for 11 months. There you go. This was an odd claim, since it is well known that such a progeny of nature was barely possible. Mischievous minds would surely have leaped to indelicate conclusions. In Rabelais' Gargantua, the eponymous giant also spends 11 months in his mother's womb. Does this sound strange? Rabelais asks and answers himself with a series of tongue-in-cheek case studies in which lawyers were clever enough to prove the legitimacy even of a child whose supposed father had died 11 months before his birth. Thanks to those learned laws, our virtuous widow may, for 2 months after her husband's demise, freely indulge in games of grip crupper with a pig in the poke, heels overhead, and to their heart's content. Montaigne had read Rabelais and must have thought of the obvious jokes, but he seemed unconcerned. No paternity doubts emerge anywhere in the essays. Montaigne even muses on the power of inheritance in his family, describing traits that had come down to himself through his great-grandfather, grandfather, and father, including an easygoing honesty and propensity to kidney stones. He seems to have considered himself very much his father's son.
Montai was happy to talk about honesty and hereditary ailments, but was more discreet about other aspects of his heritage. For he came not from ancient aristocracy, but on both sides from several generations of upwardly mobile merchants.
Ooh, that would annoy the gentry. Who are those people? Ooh, they weren't born to money. They actually created their wealth. We can't have them, no.
He even made out that the Montaigne estate was the place where most of his ancestors were born. A blatant fudge. So we know Montaigne was fudging a bit. His own father was the first to be born there. The property itself had been in the family for longer. It was true Montaigne's great-grandfather, Ramon Equiem, bought it in 1477, towards the end of a long, successful money-making deal in life dealing in wine, fish, and wood. The plant woad, W-O-A-D. Did you get this one? This is a plant from which blue dye is extracted, an important local product. Now that was also part, and we can still see that. And Ramon's son, Grimond, did little to the estate other than adding an oak and cedar-lined path to the nearby church. But he built up the Equiem worth even further and started another family tradition by getting involved in Bordeaux politics. At some point, he gave up trade and began living nobly, an important step. Being noble was not je ne sais quoi of class and style. It was a technical matter. And the main rule was that you and your descendants must engage in no trade, pay no taxes for at least three generations. Grimond's son, Pierre, also avoided trade, so noble status fell for the first time on generation number three. Michel Equiem de Montaigne himself. By that time, ironically, his father Pierre had turned the estate from attractive land into a successful commercial concern. The chateau became the head of a fairly large wine-producing business, yielding tens of thousands of liters of wine every year. Oh, yeah. Now, let's go back and have a stroll with our friend Michel. And begin to wonder, Michel, you're a little bit strange there, buddy. And you're writing about yourself all the time, but, you know, to be honest, you have a little bit of a buzz going there, boy. There's nothing wrong with getting one on, or, you know, at breakfast time, and, you know, certainly coming from the genetics of the Highland, there is always a bottle of whiskey on the table. You need a little bit of something with your porridge in the morning. And that's historically supportable. And our friends in Ireland had a penchant for some rather smooth elixirs to help them get over the cough. And I think it's curious, if I'm not mistaken, our friend John tells me that it may be a cure for what ails your heart. That certainly seems to have done wonders in that man's stead. So, Michel, you could just spare a glass of that with me every now and then. That'd be really nice of you. And then I'm pretty sure, if Michel ever did get pixelated on, what did he say, hundreds of thousands of bottles a year? Tens of thousands of liters of wine a year. Now, there's a challenge for any of us. And it's still, they still produce it. It's a chateau. Michel de Montaigne. You can go look it up, Google it. I don't know what it tastes like. But Bordeaux's nice. You know, I like the wine from the region. This was allowed. You can make as much money as you like selling the products of your own land without it be considered trade. An interesting little rule. So if you were rich, you just made up your own rules. Oh my goodness, it hasn't changed today. Anyway, I don't want to bore you anymore with this. We'll come back to this. Is that all right? The Equiem story exemplifies the degree of mobility then possible. Today, not so much. Not so much. If you think, it still is possible, but the risks in order to achieve are so great. And the tragedies, flotsam and jetsam, aren't they? Now, I did happen to run into Ray Worship and Brother Tim Barber last evening in Toronto. An exceptional fellow, an exceptional man. And I spoke to him more about the Lodge of Strict Observance. And I'll talk to you more, or as much as I can, about this in upcoming shows. I want to put this out there to you. I don't think I'm a harmful Freemason, but I'm thinking that I'm not going to revive anything. I don't subscribe to that kind of thinking. But I think there are some experiences that could really be quite enriching. And strict observance Freemasonry takes the giggles out of it and replaces it with a very, very thoughtful Masonic experience. Again, just as Freemasonry is not for everybody, neither is the Lodge of Strict Observance. And the strict observance isn't about cracking your knuckles with a ruler. It's about the thoughtful, it's about a thoughtful application of attention to the detail. Doing it the way it was, I think some of us would say, meant to be. So let's see what we can come up with in the upcoming shows. Next week I'm going to be up in Timmins at the rededication of the lodge, and I have some official duties that I'm required to attend, so I won't be with you the following week. I believe I will be. In the meantime, I'll try and stay in touch with you. I do hope that you will continue to produce random acts of Masonic kindness. And if you are most successful in your Masonry, you will do them unknown to complete strangers. Try that one. In the meantime, when you pick up the rocks and look under them, with that driven by that curiosity, come back and tell me what you find. Tell me what you find and what that whole process of curiosity opens in your life. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here today and joining you. I look forward to our next meeting in Lodge, and I hope that you're well until we meet again. Here's a little bit of Louis Armstrong from 1924. See his first recording. Cheers. What